Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, college basketball fans? I just had to get some sort of different intro in there. That's my boxing show, Rope-A-Dope Radio intro, but I had to put it in there because it is showtime. It is ready to rumble time. And actually, we were just randomly talking about the UFC right before we got on, or we were about to anyway, and so it kind of fit in there. Obviously, we are back. The College Ball Show returns for our weekly segment, weekly podcast in general. We'll have plenty of different segments, I should say. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to break down everything college basketball oriented. Now, obviously, the show's going to start from, you know, with some weekend talk. Obviously, a lot of things got finalized this weekend, whether it was a co-champion or individual team taking over the title. Of course, you know, the last month or 6 weeks, the season really came down all the way down to the wire, which is obviously great, you know, looking from the outside as a boxing fan, or as a college basketball fan, but in a boxing fan. But, you know, obviously when you have, like, North Carolina really grinding that thing all the way down to it, Miami chokes. Obviously, when you have something at stake and it's your team, it's a little bit more nerve-wracking as it comes down. But from just a sheer fan standpoint, the way this season closed was just a blast. And I remember even a month ago, 6 weeks ago, going, you know what? We could sit there and break down who has the tougher schedule to close and all that. But honestly, there's so many games and so many things happening from week to week. And obviously it was, you know, teams playing hot potato with the number one ranked, you know, spot all season long, definitely playing hot potato besides maybe Kansas and Villanova kind of putting a chokehold on it a little later in the season. But there was a stretch there where weekly the number one team was going down, and sometimes four out of the top six teams were going down. And so we're going to start kind of with, of course, some recap from stuff that just happened, but kind of in a nutshell, in a sense anyway, kind of wrapping up this season overall, regular season-wise. And then, of course, we'll get on the bubble talk. We'll look at the bracketology and just kind of take a gander, kind of preview some of the stuff that could be. And, of course, we'll take a look at the conference tournaments, the seedings, and all that. And just kind of, in a nutshell, preview. Obviously, we can't predict, you know, a ton of games today because, you know, a lot of the heart of the stuff, the ones that really need a lot of predicting, will come Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and Sunday. But we will, of course, talk about the tourney, no doubt about it. But before we get anywhere as far as, you know, talking about the season as a whole, let's start out with some good news from your aspect, Marshall. Obviously, North Carolina got the job done. It was a grinded-out game, no doubt about it. It was an ugly game at times as well, with your North Carolina squad getting it done against Duke. Big win for them. And with Miami getting beat, which was crazy, they got beat by Virginia Tech. They definitely dropped the ball on that one. But it really, I don't think it would have mattered because if they would have tied, you know, the fact that I think head-to-head they only played once. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they did play twice. But I remember, obviously, the butt-whooping that North Carolina put on Miami. Well, you know, it wasn't pretty. It was a fun year all year. You guys looked like you had control. Then the ACC, maybe on the bottom isn't that crazy, but mid to the top four to five teams really got strong, really came alive. Virginia, Miami all made a good run at it. Shoot, even Duke considering their situation. But in the end, North Carolina, Marshall, your squad gets it done and ends up winning the ACC, not tournament, but the ACC overall with a 14-4 record, 25-6 overall. Clearly going to be a number one seed. Virginia still has a chance to be a number one seed, I believe, just because of the quality of wins. And obviously, a lot of it has to do with, you know, how they close. But let's talk about it, because I thought this was an important game. I mean, Duke wouldn't go away. You know, they just wouldn't go away. I got to give them a lot of credit. They grinded this freaking, they melted the clock down all the way down trying to still, you know, get it in. Here's what I like about it. Obviously, I'm going to let you go in depth on the game and whatnot, Marshall, but the fact that North Carolina only hit four threes of 23 and they shot 35%, the fact that they won the game is a good thing because they learned how to grind out a defensive game when they didn't have their offense, and they got to the line 23 times and hit 20 of those compared to 15 on the other side as far as getting to the line. High turnover rate, no doubt about it. That was probably, you know, an issue there as well. But the fact that you guys didn't have your shooting down pat, you still got the W, and Johnson just had a man's game.
He put on a show. The numbers he put up in both of the Caroline-Duke games was, I would say, like kind of like Hansborough-esque. Not quite, but it reminded me of Hansborough. It's kind of funny. They actually showed him Hansborough sitting in the crowd. He must have been in like the third or fourth row. And then I saw on Twitter after the game, it's like Hansborough now officially 5-0 when playing Duke at home. So, or in Duke. So that was kind of funny. Overall, I was very happy to see them win. I believe if I was the coach of this team, they have the pieces to win the national title. It's just I wish that they would limit the amount of threes that Barry and Page have been taking. There's no reason, and this would be a minority point, but I think Marcus Page can turn it on for this tournament run. He's had a down year as a senior, no doubt, but he's also highly ranked in the Carolina Tar Heel record books as being a prominent scorer. He's a senior. He's going out on top. He's not going to be a lottery pick by any means, so I hope he can kind of get out of this funk and help carry this team offensively. Barry, on the other hand, drives me kind of nuts. He was the guy that actually called out the team in the media after they lost Virginia, saying they got to play better defense. It's like, dude, if you're going to call out the team, A, you better shoot better against Duke, and B, you better play better defense yourself. I didn't quite like that, considering he's not a senior, and I won't really say a team leader. But moving on, I think if Barry and Page can limit their threes, which they get a little gung-ho on sometimes, and continue to feed our bigs, we'll do very well. But we absolutely murdered Duke on the boards. I believe it was 63 boards for us compared to around 30 for them. And we did hit clutch free throws. There's been a lot of games lately when we have played Duke as North Carolina, and we've let leads slip away. I remember, I believe it was last year at Duke, we were up and let a 10-point lead dwindle away with under 2 minutes to go due to free throws. And in years prior, I mean, Duke had beat us four times in a row. It was just kind of sickening, and they beat us 10 out of 13. And I believe out of those 10 losses, none have really been blowouts, except for maybe one when we got smoked. It was a matter of letting late-game leads slip away. And this is something that on paper I buy into, and just for the fact for the senior-laden team we have, this is the first time those seniors have won at Duke. Maybe it's just me because I love this rivalry, but I think that's a stepping stone that those kids – yeah, I know, that those kids can take. So Marcus Page and Bryce Johnson, who've had about as good of a careers as you can have for guys that aren't named like, you know, Ty Lawson and Vince Carter, this was a big step for them. this was something to get over the hump and say, you know what, guys, this is our damn senior year. Let's lock into Duke on senior night and finally beat this team that we've blown games before in the past and got and let's get it done. And they were able to do that. That also gave them a number one seed to win the to win the ACC alone. It will help out their stock, barring a, I would say, a first-round exit for their first game in the ACC tournament. They're definitely looking good at a one seed. I would assume they should win their first game and possibly continue to go for the ACC title. Not something Carolina's prominent at, but they normally put up a decent showing. But yeah, it was just a really nice win. You got a little crazy on threes, but that might just be something I've lived with for the next, or I'll have to live with for this final month with Barry and Paige. But besides the Duke game, the three games before, they'd actually hit, I believe, 9 threes in one game, 11 in another. So it's made minor progress. We're not shooting threes tremendously, but up until this game, we've been doing a lot better than we had been for what the season stats show. For Duke, they're just running out of bodies, and they really had a tough time shooting. Ingram, again, had a very poor night shooting against us. He was 3 of 12, I believe, in the first game. He was 7 for 21, so he's been shooting about 30% against Carolina this year head-to-head. I'll let a quote-unquote superstar shoot 30% against us in our head-to-head rivalry. I can live with that. So that was nice. Grayson Allen did get some points up on the board. I know he hit a couple of threes, which made the game interesting near the end, along with Kennard too. So, I was talking to a bar guest, and I'll finish at this point. And he was telling me about how, at Carolina, they looked a little rough there finishing that game up. It's like, well, that is true. Also, though, that's Carolina Duke. You don't have many games where it is a blowout at the end. I can recall a couple of teams, like our 09 title team, like I think we kind of kicked their butt at some point with Lawson Hansborough. But Duke's also on that two back in there with like Battier and Redick. But for the most part, even though the finish wasn't great, this is a rivalry, and the games normally do finish within, I would say, a 3 to 7 point range almost every year. So, overall, I was happy, man. And like I said, I think that's a step they mentally needed to help them progress and have more of a mindset of, we can really do this, guys. We accomplished this goal as our seniors. Let's have our senior leaders continue to guide us and make a run for a title that Carolina can win. They're not a crazy heavy favorite, but they are a team that can win the title this year. It's possible, and this was a nice step in a good direction for them, Chris.
And just staying in the ACC, kind of clearing it up, like I mentioned, Miami has a chance to win it, technically, you know what I mean? Even if with a tie, but if Carolina had fallen, yada, yada, yada. But they went down to Virginia Tech, who's not all that bad, but it doesn't matter. You know, at this point in time, you know, if you have a chance at a number one seed at that point, you got to kind of tighten up and get that done. It's kind of interesting with Miami because there wasn't much to them. Then all of a sudden they kind of popped up, and you're like, okay, well, this squad, yeah, okay, let's see if they're, you know, because they kind of every couple years kind of gone through a cycle. They do get not really just JUCO, but transfer guys. It seems like they're pretty laden with that. They obviously the first run they had with the coach, he kind of had to do that right away. Just to kind of turn around the program, but it seems like he's staying with that. But I wonder what the psyche is there, because they showed a lot of promise, started looking like an it team. There's not an it team, but meaning there's a bunch of them. And then they got their ass whooped by North Carolina. But then they bounced back very strong in a tight game against Virginia at home. And then they closed out the season ready to go, and then they dropped the ball. What do you think here, Marshall, with Miami just off that? Do you look too far in it, or do you say, well, guys, you had your chance against North Carolina head up. You got stomped. Now, you did come back, but is that inconsistency going to be an issue? Because you literally have a chance to win it in a number one seed, and you go down to Virginia Tech, you just wonder what the psyche, and then also with the ACC, Virginia, they really shut the door on Louisville's little pride season to try to compete in the ACC and try to get a title that they know that it wouldn't have went down in the books, but pridefully they would have gotten it. But that wasn't the case. Virginia just slammed the door, 68-46, shot 51%, and Louisville, they held them to 27%. So those two teams, those are the three teams that kind of stand out all the way down the stretch. Virginia closing strong with that great non-conference record, Marshall. Still alive for a number one seed. And obviously, what do you think of Miami? Because you just can't quite get a grip of them. Is that a maybe too strong of a yellow flag that the two times to close the season they had a chance to do something, they got their butt whooped and then lost to a team they had no business losing to if they're going to be taken as a serious team. What do you think about those two squads just to kind of clear up the ACC as we move along with this recap in the first hour?
Sure. I would say, Chris, I have a little more of a better feeling with Virginia, so I'll talk about them first. I'm continuing to buy stock in them. At the start of the year, I was pretty sold on this as your typical Virginia team that plays super good defense with Tony Bennett as a coach. But again, I'm not truly sold on offensively. And kind of out of the woodwork, at least maybe I didn't realize this from last year, is this Brogdon guy. And maybe he was a decent player last year, but he sure as heck didn't get all the praise he's been getting. And it's been warranted. This Brogdon kid can score. He single-handedly was pretty much their go-to scorer to help beat Carolina in Virginia, which was a close contested game. And every time I watch them play, all you hear about is this kid. Now, I'm not sure if he's going to be, you know, a Greek god that can carry them to win a national championship, but it doesn't seem like people have a way of finding a way to slow him down. If I were to play Virginia, I would go at him immediately and try to cause him to get fouls because he appears to be their lone scorer. I know that Virginia's point guard, is it Ferentes, I think, he can handle the ball pretty well. He doesn't make many turnovers, and he runs a ship for them. And with the way their offensive plays, they're not looking to play like the, you know, like the Golden State Warriors for an up-tempo team, or like Carolina would back in the day. They're kind of a fundamental, let's run our offense, maybe not do like backdoor cuts or anything crazy like Princeton, but let's just run our offense and maybe shoot the ball with like 6 seconds left on the clock, and we're going to take a good shot, which shouldn't screw us over for a bad position or leave us trailing for, transition defense. So overall, I continue to be more impressed with them because I think that they actually have a guy in Brogdon who can carry the load because defensively they're going to bring it. Now, again,
they shoot a high percentage, too. They're very efficient on offense. And I think sometimes the stats can be like, well, look at their average on offense. Yeah, but when they play that kind of defense, and when you play a certain style of offense, the scores are going to be down, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the numbers are pretty low. I believe their scoring in points per game is pretty low, but that is because they truly milk the clock. Their attempted shots or points per game is lower on average than most teams. But like I said, if you got Brogdon, you can play D in a year like this, and Virginia really hasn't had any bad losses that really jumps off the mat to me. So, yeah, I'm continuing to buy stock in them. Again, if Brogdon gets in any kind of foul trouble at all, I don't know. No one has really ever really – I don't think they have a second guy to turn to, which is scary. But he's a good catalyst for that team. For Miami, I heard the coach Larry Nega say in the press conference after that game that he said he thought the team was too focused. They were too motivated, and they had their minds set too far in on the game, and they kind of just lost track of the goal of simply winning. I mean, it's kind of a weird quote because, I mean, if you're super focused, like, I guess you'd kind of expect a better performance, but maybe there was a little too much mental pressure on them, Chris. I'm not going to rip the team too much because I don't think you were necessarily looking good either, but they didn't lose at home in the ACC this year, which not everyone plays everyone back and forth, but that's something to be proud of. I know Duke went in there, and they beat Duke. They beat Virginia. I'm almost sure they beat Louisville. So their at-home resume, pretty damn good to go win to undefeated in ACC at home play. But yeah, maybe the mental mindset wasn't quite there for Virginia Tech. I'll be curious like you to see how they do in the ACC tournament. Because all year, all I've heard is they have a very good center, and they have senior guards, and they have a coach who's pretty damn good. Larrinaga is a pretty good coach. And
oh, yeah.
From the times I've seen Miami, you know, the dude knows how to coach come tournament time, and they're not exactly.
He beat my UConn team, dude. He beat my UConn team. I'll remember this freaking guy for the rest of my life.
They're not an early exit team. So I expect maybe Larrinaga to get the wrinkles out of them. But, you know, they've also been, you know, like on everyone else on the road, had their, you know, ups and downs. So I think maybe the mental mindset got to them a little bit. Maybe they were a little overly focused, which, or maybe a little uptight, which is, you know, in basketball can cause you to kind of have an off day. So I don't know about overly focused,
I'll say. I don't think that's a thing. Overly focused?
Well,
how could you focus too much, you know? It looks like they weren't focusing enough and they were looking ahead of what they've accomplished or something. Because they took their eye off the ball.
There's different ways to dissect what he said. So, however you want to view that, you know, nonetheless, as you mentioned, losing to Virginia Tech is not a strong way to finish the ACC season, and that's also one of those bad losses. Obviously, later in the show, when we discuss bubble situations, a lot of stuff in NCAA comes down to, like, you know, RPI and KenPom and all that stuff, but also it comes to the simple nature of who are your good wins and who are your bad losses. And that is not a win. Now, clearly Miami's in the tournament, but their seeding could be affected by this. And that is what you consider a bad loss, even though it's on the road. So, obviously, I would say the stock is much higher in Virginia. And we'll see. Like I said, Larrinaga, come tournament time, that I wouldn't be surprised if they obviously won their first game and put up a good fight in the second one. But definitely a head-scratching way to finish that season, Chris. And
it kind of makes me go, man, I don't know. I guess it's one thing to have a stumble of two or three games in a row like everybody else has, and maybe we're looking at it wrong and say, well, they didn't have that stumble of late or anything like that, and it shouldn't be looked at weird. But I don't know, in the two moments that you had to really do something down the stretch, you just wonder if that'll, if that'll come to play and they rely on some outside shooting too much. Just kind of makes me wonder. And also, just a quick note on Virginia. Remember last year, a lot of these guys are seniors, not just guards, but bigs as well. And remember last year, they lost that guy who was a pro, you know, who was one of the better players in the ACC. I think that's why you didn't hear about this Brogdon, because he was the second fiddle. But remember, they actually did pretty good for that 6 weeks that guy was gone. I think a lot of those guys were juniors at that time, and they really must have got that core unit together and learned how to not rely on just one guy that's a standout, whatever, player, top 20, you know, numbers-wise player. So maybe that had a lot to do with it. Obviously, their coaching is pretty damn solid as well. But, man, they look like they got just a nice in-between team, whereas last year, last 2 years, they've looked the part at times, but there is something, I just think the efficiency of their offense this year is a little different. And when you look at, like you said, their pace is really what keeps their offensive numbers down, but their shooting as a team, their offensive efficiency overall, and the three-point line, it's pretty interesting. They definitely have improved in that. So I look for them to make a little bit longer and deeper of a run. And obviously, they still got a chance at a number one seed. It matters how they close here.
And if you are Virginia, I think the magic potion you're praying for is that Michigan State's not in your bracket. Now, it's looking like Michigan State could potentially be a one, and Virginia, as of now, in bracketology, is a one as well. So if you were to face said team, it'd be either in the national title or in the semifinals, which is obviously far down the road. But Virginia's ran into Tom Izzo the last two marches, which is not obviously anything anyone dreams of. So to maybe have him out of your picture, except for maybe a serious contending spot, would be kind of a breath of fresh air. Because say we want, every year, Izzo has those boys ready to go, and they're almost a shoe-in to be Sweet 16 Elite Eight contenders no matter what. Even if you think this is one of his better teams or not, Michigan State's always a pain in the ass. So for Virginia having to more likely not play them until a very serious down-the-road team, that's kind of maybe something that they can enjoy as well coming into March Madness, Chris.
Yeah, and, you know, that just got updated, too, because the last one had them in the same side. So
as, like, the one or two feet or something.
Yep, that's exactly what it was. So I was like, uh-oh, here we go. They may have another showdown. Let's switch to the Big Ten. Obviously, we're going to kind of go through a couple of these conferences and see how they closed out, what was the reason behind the closeout, and just kind of talk about overall maybe some of the top teams, kind of like we just did with the ACC. You know, it wasn't Saturday, but this was the game. You know, we haven't done one since Tuesday, a podcast, so this was the game in the Big Ten that decided it in the end. Obviously, throughout the season, you can say, oh, this game, you can point to that game, but in the end, Indiana, a team that all year long just looked like a fun team to watch, and we knew they were going to put up some points. You did kind of see the development of their bigs as far as just being quality, not necessarily guys you can feed over and over again. But when you got hard play, you got a good coach, you move the ball a lot. It wasn't about just feeding the bigs. It was just about them, you know, improving because they were young. So I got to say, man, here's a guy in Yogi Ferrell that really – Farrell, that really, man, this guy's been fun since he stepped on campus, Marshall. And here's another story of a guy that, you know, is not going to go pro right away, but just a fun player. And the way he put, I mean, the game was neck and neck down the stretch. Iowa kept trying to get back into it, and then they would get maybe a one-point lead. Indiana would go back up, and it just, it looked like Iowa was going to lose, but they kept themselves in the game to the point where you're like, okay, they may actually get this, dude. They need that big win. And we talked about Iowa the last couple weeks and how they've really just fallen flat on their face to an extent, obviously. But, you know, the way they looked mid-season, especially in the first, I don't know, 6 to 8 conference games, what's going on with them? And not just that, this is really not a bad loss by any stretch, but for Yogi to put the game on ice in the closing, I don't know, 20, 30 seconds to put that three, that dagger that he put in, the Hoosiers really kind of just snuck up on both of us and stayed. And once they had some staying power, Marshall, they started getting some wins that they previously hadn't had. And what do you know? They end up getting it done against Iowa. And like I said, Yogi with that three. If it would have been about 5 feet back, I would have said Stephen Curry-esque, but it wasn't. So, you know what I mean? It wasn't far enough to say that. But, man, he really put the game on ice. And I like guys like this. You know, we talk about a variety of guys on the show. You broke down, of course, your North Carolina squad and a couple of guards on there and players in general. Center as well, but Yogi's sure. Just been a fun player to watch his whole time here. Very explosive, very, you know, kind of punches in bunches. You know, he gets his points in bunches, really just fills it up when he gets going, and he really closed it out. He had a nice game, and 14-3 in a pretty solid Big Ten. I don't think they're the best conference this year. I don't think they've been what they've been maybe in the last 3 to 5 years, but man, They're looking impressive. That, you know, when you say who's hot and who's not, this is an exact game that you can look at and go, okay, well, there's two teams, who's hot and who's not, heading into March Madness. What do you think here? Because the Hoosiers, they just kind of lingered and built themselves up, and now they're a team to be reckoned with. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, you know, at the start of the year in the Big Ten, I thought they were kind of getting a little bit of a free pass from their schedule. I remember when we were doing a show, well, God, this would have been maybe 5 to 6 weeks ago, they were, like, in first place at, like, 7-1. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, who the hell have they played? Like, I watched about as much college ball as I've watched in the last couple of years, because we've done our show, or even more. And I was like, I really haven't seen Indiana play any of the big teams. And so you look at their schedule, and they were kind of getting the bottom of the barrel of the Big Ten. But then, you know, to finish, you beat Iowa and Maryland to finish your last two games. Now, clearly, Maryland on the road has had some moments where you're like, yeah, and they're another team, I guess, I will touch on after this. But, and, you know, and they also, well, swept Iowa and Maryland, and they also beat Purdue at home, which is kind of like, in Indiana, that is Carolina-Duke, Purdue and Indiana. And they're able to win that game by four. Now, clearly, Purdue has had some moments, but nonetheless, a rivalry game. So, you know, at the start of the year, you're like, yeah, I'm not sure if I'm buying it. But the way they finished, you're thinking, okay, this team is playing pretty well. Yogi Ferrell seems to just be one of those guys that no one can guard. He's going to get his threes off. You know, he's always just been able to work the ball off the dribble and appears to be one of those guys that's kind of pain in the butt to guard. So, again, I feel that Tom Crean normally has his Indiana teams going pretty well, but they're also kind of one of those early exit teams too. I wouldn't say that they're Villanova-esque, but there's quite a few years where Tom Crean has been like, okay, well, you know, Indiana's playing good, and then, oh, they didn't make the Sweet 16. And I know at the start of the year when they opened in Maui, they lost again to Wake Forest, and I guess Indiana people are saying, like, dude, he needs to go, you know. Obviously, when you're a fan of a team, you're maybe a little more sensitive to a loss than the natural public. But yeah, well, for the doubts I had in him, Chris, to give credit to the teams I have given credit to in the Big Ten this year, it would be naive to say Indiana doesn't deserve credit because you beat all the tough teams you really had to down the stretch. Losing to Michigan State's nothing really to be ashamed of 6 games back, and they won their final five. So I guess I believe in them. Yogi's a guy that can shoot. He's going to cause a defensive problem. I just, in the back of my head, I'm kind of thinking, okay, you know, I've heard this story of Tom Crean quite a bit. Let's see if they can make a little bit of a deeper run. But for
I don't know
momentum,
if that's fair, though. Hold on. Before we say you've heard that quite a bit, he made a nice little run with a Marquette team not long ago and had a solid program. It's not like they've been winning the Big Ten. And they haven't been, like you said, he didn't go quite to Villanova, but they haven't even they had that one really great season under him. But remember, when he took over, they weren't a great team or a great program. You know what I mean? They've been kind of, Indiana-wise, they've been kind of, I'm not going to say in the dumps before he got there, because they did have a good portion of a season, like three-fourths of a season, until, you know, the previous coach, that didn't work out as well. But
yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily put that on him as the coach at Indiana. I don't think they've accomplished a whole lot per se. I mean, they did win the Big Ten title, but considering what they had accomplished maybe in the last 8 years before he got there, I don't know if I'd go, well, they've been there, and this has happened to several times. I don't know if I agree with that. I just remember a couple years back, their team got knocked off in the Sweet 16, and that's something you could say, well, man, they really underachieved there. But other than that, I don't know if I'd put that on Crean in Indiana as far as that. I wouldn't paint them with that wide of a brush, because I just don't think there's a big enough sample size of having a Big Ten winning team and then choking in the tournament.
I'd say that's fair. I just whenever I hear people talk about Crean, I think the guy gets a ton of praise, and I guess I'm not sure if all of it's deserved. And I guess that'd be my only comment back.
Well,
to that. But,
did he do a hell of a job coaching this year?
This year he did. Like I said, this year I'll give him a thumbs up. You
well,
beat everything you had to.
He won the Big Ten.
Yeah, like I said, he's been playing great ball. I just want to see, you know, if Indiana comes out and loses their first game of the Big Ten tournament, you're going to be like, holy cow, what the hell happened? I just want to see him prove it just a little bit. Because I know they've been winning, but when I've watched them play, I'm still not sold on their defense. And that scares me just a little bit, because I think come tournament time, you know, you do need some D. Again, that's one of my biggest fears about my Tar Heels. Indiana this year, when I watched them play, they're going to try and outscore you, and Yogi's going to try and run the ship on you, which works. But I just want to see them maybe improve, see if they can have that defensive piece to them and see how they'll do. So they've had a hell of a year. I just want to see if they could make it to the second weekend, which I'd imagine most Indiana fans are pretty much saying, all right, dude, we won the Big B, a Sweet 16 team. Fair or not, I guess we'll find out. Speaking of them, though, who they did play to cap off their Big Ten season, Maryland. You know, I told you last week I'm going to stick with Iowa in the Final Four, because that's something I said, and I don't want to go wishy-washy on it. I was wishy-washy on Maryland.
You stick with them, but you won't rip them. You'll rip every other team in the Big Ten, but you won't touch Iowa. Jesus. They ended fifth. They went from first to fifth. They went from a number one seed to fifth. And you're not going to even – you're going to rip Indiana's record. You're going to rip Maryland. Yeah. They only got one guy at Maryland. How many guys they got at Iowa? Come on. Be fair.
We're on Maryland right now, Chris.
Yeah, because you got to go lower because they're higher than your squad.
I think I'm to the point now where – I've turned a blind eye to Iowa, and I can't change.
Obviously. Just real quick, 15-3 Indiana. Yeah. Look at how it ended, though. Michigan State, you know, remember when they had those four wins or four losses in a row? They ended up 13-5. And then you had teams at 12-6, Maryland, Purdue, Iowa, and Wisconsin. So Wisconsin technically didn't hit that fourth spot because they lost to Purdue on the last game. That would have gave them the fourth spot. Unfortunately, their record is done with that top four. But, you know, it really doesn't matter this year. And by the way, the coach
is
your five-year deal, too, sounds like.
Yeah, that's
Greg,
awesome. I'm happy.
That's a good look
for them. Yeah, the way Greg Gard coached the team, because the Badgers started out 1-4, and to finish 12-6, you basically went, 11-2. That's a hell of a nice finish. They might be down there a little bit under those teams, but I know head to head they beat some of those teams as well. Now, obviously, Iowa. I'll give you credit on this. Touch Crookman, Iowa. At the start of the year, I was pretty high on them because I said they've showed resilience on the road and they were playing really good ball because everyone seemed to take turns scoring. They're passing the ball very well. And your quote was, I've seen this out of Iowa a couple of times where they start the year off pretty hot and they kind of fall flat on their face at the end. You nailed it. I thought that I was a little bit more sold on this team because the way they, like you said, at the start of the year, they were playing some of the better basketball in the country and the Big Ten. But your projection that you said probably 2 months ago, I'm like, all right, let me see it, Marshall. Let's see how they finish. Coming down the stretch, they didn't finish too strong. So in one sense, as I just mentioned, I want to see how Indiana does in the Big Ten tournament to see if they can carry their momentum from winning the Big Ten. If you're Iowa, you can use this as kind of a prep game of like, guys, okay, we finished the year beating Michigan. Let's try and get some of our swagger back as we prepare to go into the big dance as well. They haven't played good. Now, as I said, for Maryland quickly, that team, I don't know. That team has to have one.
See
how
you even start that out? You just got Iowa out of the way, and then Maryland, here's the thing about Maryland. This team is garbage. It's hot garbage. Like, come on, dude. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not going to support a guy that got kicked off Duke for, you know, his issues. And All right, anyways. I'm happy you're catching on to my likes and dislikes with the Big Ten. I honestly, Chris, I don't know what to say. I'm not going to waste more than 10 seconds, but Maryland has a lot of skill, but there's games where they play and you're just like, where's that skill? I've talked about them a lot this year, and maybe I ripped on teams more than I should in the Big Ten Iowa Free Pass, but for Maryland itself, that team has a tremendous amount of people that are really good at basketball, but some games you just see them and you're like, dude, where is the ability to, you know, to play the games? They were pretty good at home this year. I think they only had one or two losses. I know they lost to Wisconsin once, but Indiana kind of kicked them in the butt. They had kind of a mental hiccup against the Gophers. This is a team that come tournament time, I really don't even care what they do in the Big Ten. They could easily be a Sweet 16 team if they maybe get the right draw, Chris, but they could also lose round one. And I think it'd probably be fair to say that about Iowa, too, because they haven't been playing that great of basketball. But Iowa also, I wouldn't say it has the skill level that Maryland offers on the court. Maryland has people that
now you say
have potential
that?
To be.
Okay, hold on, because it used to be the one-man show at Maryland. The thing is about Maryland, they only got one dude. Now they got a plethora of all-stars all of a sudden. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm not trying to be difficult.
No.
But you've been doing this Maryland-Iowa thing all year, and so I got to call you out on it. I mean, remember, it used to be Trimble. They got one freaking guy. Now they got an all-star team that can't play right. Which one is it?
Well, I think
they're very inconsistent. You know, and when they got through their inconsistent, Trimble wasn't shooting well. You know, they've now got enough role players around them. He has good enough players around him. It started to be, at first it wasn't his, I'm not saying it's his fault, but all the way. I don't know their names. I don't know if the screen's getting properly set the way the coach wants it, that stuff. But when they've struggled, he's struggled a little bit in the last maybe month, I'd say too. You know?
Yeah.
So I think he has.
He's been pretty cold as well. Okay, well, let me ask you this question. Just overall, Big Ten, just forget about all my biases and loves. Would it be fair to say that Maryland will be the most unpredictable team to predict come tournament time? Because, I mean, we can point out good and bad about all the teams in the Big Ten and what we may think, but once you say this is going to be the toughest team to say, huh, Marshall, should I have them win their first game or should I have them get bounced? Is that a fair assessment in your mind? Because I would say Maryland is the most unpredictable tournament team in the Big Ten.
I think you're going over the top with the first round. I think they'll get by their first round. But I'd agree it's right there. It's right there. They didn't make the fall. You know, I think you could put Iowa in that, too. Because, by the way, they've lost to some non-ranked teams, too. Some teams that they should have no business losing to. So it's not like they're losing to ranked teams on the road or something like that. So did Maryland. Obviously, Minnesota. So,
speaking of the Gophers,
those two stand out right there. Yeah, definitely. I think so. I don't think either of them will go out the first round, but I think it is one of those going to be hard to judge that team. I'm 100% right with you because they have been very inconsistent. But then when they show that flash, you're like, wow, dude, it's going to be a tough team to beat.
Well, and I'll say this for my final thought on the Big Ten. As you mentioned, you wrapped up how the standings went. We've touched on some of the top-tier teams. Quietly, Wisconsin, I'm not saying that they're going to win the national title this year, but for the last couple of months, they've probably played as good as fundamental basketball as teams could imagine. So for a year at the start of the season where I didn't think the Badgers would even make the tournament, and I've always kind of cheered for them because when I go on my March trip – there's some former Badger basketball players, a lot of alumni at that school, so it's always kind of a fun team to watch games with on my various vacation spots. At the start of the year, many didn't think they'd make the tournament. Now they're looking, they're obviously going into the tournament, avoiding bubble talking, could be maybe even as high as like a six seed potentially, so nice turnout for them. But maybe with the highs and the lows I've done for bashing of Maryland and turning a blank eye to Iowa, Purdue, overall, just fundamentally, excluding my BS on the show, is probably the most team of like, huh. Like, realistically, this team has really scratched right because they've done to us all year, Chris. This is a team that's gone on the road and played superb basketball in any away Big Ten stadium as good as you could. At the end of the game, you're like, oh, God, what'd you just do? And then at home, they've also been able to defend themselves. So we've said all year, Purdue's got incredible bigs, and their guards are just kind of like the wild card. You know, they finished the year beating Wisconsin, which is a nice win, obviously as good as Wisconsin's been playing. they're only like the second loss in their last 11 games. So Purdue's that team where if they do get hot, watch out. But, man, they're another team. But, and let's just say this. The Big Ten in general is going to be kind of goofy. I felt that you and I had a better handle on kind of breaking down the ACC. Or, you know, when we get to the Big 12, I kind of have a pretty good thumb on what I expect out of the Big 12 teams. The Big Ten, Maryland, Iowa, Purdue, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll be talking about all three of them in the second weekend. Maybe they'll all three be gone. But it has made for a very fun year to enjoy, Chris, in the Big Ten. Clearly, since we live in the Minnesota area, we watch them more privy than other conferences. But overall, pretty fun in Purdue. Maybe a win against Wisconsin and a win or two in the Big Ten tournament will finally be that piece of, like, God, they need something this year to get that swagger going. Maybe they can get it really late in the year. It's pretty hard to do, but I would say still possible because you have bigs that could be the NBA people, and they're really hard to defend if you're not used to that kind of system or if you simply don't have the height, Chris.
Yeah, it is kind of a that type of year in the Big Ten. It looked like it was a little bit down heading into it and just starting the season and looking what the talent was. And by the way, it'll be interesting to see if the NCAA with Wisconsin, if they actually get involved, because I know the school came down with their ruling, but I believe the NCAA has something to say about that as well, as far as the misuse funds thing in his affair or whatever. That's a good look, though, that they got a coach. You know, that'll be three coaches in a row that are solid now for that program, which is it's key to keep the keep that stability within recruiting and in the system itself. That's a pretty good look, no doubt about it. The SEC, and here's another team in A&M that you started to go, huh, let me keep an eye on this. It was kind of a keep an eye on it situation with them, and they faltered. They ended up getting a nice win, which doesn't look as nice because of what Iowa State is this year. I guess it would just be nice instead of, oh, that's a really good win. So just a nice win, but, you know, within that Big 12 SEC champion or challenge, I should say, they did lose, you know, games right in between that, and then they went on a streak where they really struggled there for a second. Did they get enough of it back? Well, you know, we could talk about that, the end of the game with Kentucky. Otherwise, Kentucky, right, you know, would have the outright championship. A&M and Kentucky got by South Carolina and LSU to clean it out and to split the championship. Has Kentucky righted the ship enough? It's not the same story because Kentucky, you know, a week ago and 2 weeks ago, man, they really looked like they were amping up for the close. And that's not to say that they can't win three in a row here and close strong and keep that momentum going. They look like more of a team headed in the right direction than A&M did a couple weeks ago. What are your thoughts at the top here? A&M and Kentucky, can they make some real noise? We know the guards are there. Will, you know, Calipari get enough out of their bigs to make another run? And what do you think of A&M, man? It's tough to judge them because they look like, okay, they got some bigs, they got some players, and then they fell flat on their face. And, you know, got to give them credit, though. They found a way to tie Kentucky for the SEC, and we knew it was going to be wide open. And it sure was, all the way, you know, went all the way down to the wire. What do you think of those two teams at the top as we break down the SEC conference?
For A&M, I'll just say, I don't care who they play. I'm going to pick them to lose their first game of the March Madness, Chris. I love Moore as their 2/3 guard. The kid can jump, the kid can score, and they have that Davis kid who had the game-winning bucket against Kentucky.
No.
But that's really about it. They've consistently had just offensive issues, and one reason they started the year off really good was because, okay, I'll give them some credit. They did really go to town and beat up on the bottom of the SEC. But looking at the bottom of the SEC, I mean, none of those teams are really going to make the tournament. So this was maybe a little bit of a softer conference. So on one hand, I'll give A&M credit for beating teams they should have, but I also think they're a step away from being a team that could make a run. And like I said, Davis, I think that kid's going to be a stud, and he's a great freshman. And Moore's good too, but no one else on the team really jumps out to me, so that's why I'd be scared about, you know, having them win a game, just because they, like you said, they went, I believe it started off, you know, like the year, you know, 15 or 17-2, and then they lost 6 out of 7 games. And that was just kind of a funk that I don't think they can, you know, really snap out of come tournament time. I could be proven wrong, but offensively, I don't buy into them. On the other hand, Kentucky, in a way, I'd almost say that Calipari has some Izzo-like skills. I don't believe Calipari's ever been bounced out first round. I could be wrong, but I know with Kentucky that I believe that'd be 100% not true. So I think that he has a way of kind of getting his people together. Now, clearly, they don't have any really good bigs or maybe lottery bigs that I'm aware of. So this isn't maybe one of his most talented laden teams. But you have a guard in Euless who won SEC Player of the Year, which is kind of trippy considering Ben Simmons is in the SEC Conference. But Euless and Murray, and those guys are studs. So I would put a lot more stock in the fact that Kentucky could be a Sweet 16 team, because that's just kind of how Calipari rolls. I'm not a huge UK fan. I'm just kind of going with what my gut tells me. And Kentucky's been playing pretty good ball, too. Remember, they housed South Carolina. They got redemption for having a little bit of a early season crumble at LSU. Overall, I would be, I guess, having a green arrow go up on one, like Lenardi does for his board, of Kentucky going up as a higher seed and A&M kind of going down. What are your thoughts on that? And also, what's your, your thoughts on Kentucky and A&M and percent chance you think that LSU can win the SEC tournament? Because a lot of people say unless they win their conference tournament, Ben Simmons is going to the NIT.
You talking about LSU then?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Because you do say Kentucky in there. Okay. All right. I don't really care much for the LSU story. I know it's been a hot topic.
Sure.
As far as they, you know, worrying about if he gets in and all that, or them. And they're kind of a fun team to watch. Yeah, I mean, it seems like, I guess I haven't analyzed too much of their resume, but it does seem like they, you know, they're going to be in the NIT unless they win out. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M, I think the way you put it, you know, with the arrows going up and down, like the bracketology, something we're going to get into with Bubble Talk here in just a moment. Yeah, I would have to say that's about right. You know, I trust the guards. Like you mentioned, the bigs aren't great, but they're not bums either. They are athletic. They can defend. Are they as great defensively as a whole this year? No, no doubt about it. But when you got two guys that can score like that and then a good game plan, the thing about their bigs is they don't have, like you said, the last handful of years, the amount of bigs. Well, they have them, but they're just not as developed. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
mixing and matching them in there and getting that 7 points and 6 boards or 8 boards and 2 blocks out of one of them, and they I'll say this: they do have a variety of guys they can throw at you. Can they throw them at you for 32 straight minutes? Probably not. But they can. You know, that's not the end of the world. You know what I mean? So I think that they can tighten up. They got the coaching. When it starts to really break down to preparing for one team and having that day off and having the game plan, like you said, Calipari, since he's been at Kentucky and really most places he's been, no matter what your thoughts on are on his past, he's definitely a guy that gets his team ready to play at this time. And I think that they have enough athleticism and variability as far as the different type of bigs that can come at you. Maybe one doesn't stand out, but if they can just get some pretty solid play from them, I think that would definitely go a long way. And A&M, yeah, I think that they're just kind of in between on that. I would really like to see who they play in the second round. You know what I mean? No doubt about it. They would be one of those teams where you go, huh, not totally sure about that. The Big 12, we already wrapped up a week ago. We've talked about it a whole lot. The Pac-12, it's there or, yeah.
Sorry, yep. Just one thing I would say on the Big 12 is Texas Tech has potential. They're definitely a bubble team. The top six Big 12 teams we've talked about all year, they're all in. Now, the seeding could change for Kansas, Iowa State, Oklahoma, and that whole bunch. But Texas Tech, I think if they could win a Big 12 game or two, that would be a great job done by Tubby Smith this year. And they're right on the brink of being a bubble team that can sneak in.
Well,
so
let's not get into bubble just yet, though. Because
okay.
I wanted to save
I guess that
bubble.
Was the one thing that came to me. I hear you. All
that's
right.
The one I was going to say for bubble. Because
okay.
Obviously I'm going to talk about Tubby. Hey. Because, you know, kind of a different thing all of a sudden, you know. Kind of funny how it's – we were just talking about up and down, you know. Two teams, one team
sure.
going up, one team going down. Well, we got one right in front of our face. And then the Pac-12, Oregon is holding on for dear life with Utah. You know, they held on, I should say, for dear life all the way down to the wire. Utah and Arizona. Utah looked very good against Arizona. California. You know, Arizona's not the same club. Could Oregon get to the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight? Or, you know, somewhere in that range, sure, maybe. They could maybe do that. But, you know, the last, I don't know, month or so, that whole ACC and Pac-12 thing, when they were leading there for a while, as far as in the bracketology, in the early bracketology stages, it was like we didn't think that would last. We were surprised that it was a thing, and it sure didn't last long enough. So, you know, once again, we're here with the Pac-12, Marshall, and there's just not much to say about it. I hate saying that, but I'm just being honest. You know, nothing really stands out to me out of there. I mean, Utah seems like they're a pretty good club to me. Oregon has a chance to get, like I said, to the Sweet 16 and all that. They've had some clubs that have gone under the radar and gotten to the Sweet 16 before, no doubt about it. And obviously, you know, they have a competent club. They did win the conference and all that. But it has a feeling of another Pac-12 season that goes by that it really doesn't matter a whole lot. And that's something that we've been saying now for a while. And you know, the mid-2000s, mid to late 2000s, the Pac-12, you know, UCLA getting there 3 years in a row. Arizona, I mean, I'll say this. Arizona, obviously, has been the one club that stands out of there because they've, you know, similar to that Virginia, Michigan State, you know, Wisconsin has knocked them back-to-back. So I don't want to rip Arizona this year, they're not that squad, which I don't really expect them to be after the last 2 year run that they had. And actually, if you really want to go further, they got to the Elite Eight and beat Duke to get to the Elite Eight, I believe, when Williams went with that crazy dunk down the lane and all that a handful of years ago. So they have been the one team that stood out, and we I've always respect that program. They produce a lot of talent. They've had a lot of fun. There's not much to say about the Pac-12, and it's kind of a bummer because when you already have the Big East as more of a hardcore basketball conference now, it really sucks when the Big East was what the Big East was, and now it's not. Now it's just a hardcore boxing conference, and I do give them credit for the teams that they added to that conference. I think that, you know, considering the predicament they were in, I thought that they did a hell of a job, excuse me, at least getting solid fan bases where you knew your road games were going to be interesting and it would look good on TV and all that. So they've done a good job, but without the Pac-12 having strength and now the Big East gone as far as what it was. It is kind of a bummer like that, and I always kind of say heading into this weekend, the last couple of weekends, that, and I know that, you know, this is something that you don't always, you have kind of a different angle on this, but nobody can tell me that the conference, you know, this year, hopefully, we get some really good conference tournament stuff, and it looks that way. We've said that now for like the last chunk of weeks, and it looks that way. But there is something about conference weekend that I'm still excited. I'll always be excited. But without that Big East Friday and Saturday night, there is a void. There is a void of not having that Friday and Saturday night, those four overtime game type thing. And now with the Pac-12 just seemingly like kind of a hot mess, just simmering of what it used to be. I mean, we say this all the time. Those Thursday night FSN games were awesome. You know what I mean? It was. Mm-hmm. It kind of sucks. And instead of breaking down the conference and the top 16s, I guess that's the way I look at it right now. Like I said, I'm not. I think Utah's come along, and I think Oregon could do something maybe because they have a way of doing something similar to like Washington getting to the Sweet 16 when they have a pretty good club, but maybe not a great club, but they find a way to get there. I just don't know much more to say about it than maybe getting nostalgic with the conference, I guess.
I can't add much. One thing I have noticed from a friend of mine who told me that Cal has some lottery people. So, Cal will kind of be a fun team to watch. They have a forward named Jaylen Brown, who is a top five potential pick, and also Ivan Rabb, who's also a forward, could be a top 10 pick. So,
didn't they smash UCLA or something recently too? They smashed someone head to, maybe it was Arizona. Yeah, that's a good call. You can't forget about Cal. They look good at times too.
Yeah, I think part of that's simply having two guys that are a potential top 10 lottery. We'll see. I mean, I just remember telling you like a month ago, like, Lenardi's got 17 wins in this conference. Like, huh? You know, really? And
yeah.
Then that one day I literally looked at every non-conference record or schedule of every top 17, and I just didn't see anything. Like, you know, Carolina, they play Kentucky.
And that's why I couldn't understand about that stat.
You know,
it was like,
They
don't even have a good record against that. So they scheduled some pretty decent non-conferences, but they didn't win them, you know?
Yeah, I didn't get it. I remember one of the top 17s played a couple of handful of good teams, and I know they didn't win all their games. That was it. So I was just looking at it. I'm like, if I don't recognize what school a team they're playing, what conference that team's in, you can't tell me that's like a beautiful resume. That's like, God, look at how everyone in the Pac-12 battled this year to have a great non-conference. Oh, dude, if you win all your games against Presbyterian and Stony Brook, like, I really don't care, you know? So I'm in the same camp as you. I think that they're of the main conferences, and we use that term lightly for them lately, they could be the most important. Just because I think a lot of teams still have something to try and prove, and you have just maybe enough time left. But, yeah, that's it, Chris. And I'll say this, and we can move on. I did watch the 30 for 30 on the making of the Big East. And I know back in the day I was a little bit, I will say, my statement was unintelligent. Or I was maybe a little bit biased because for a while you'd hear that, you know, people would kind of compare the Big East basketball to SEC football. And I've clearly come a long way on both of those things, Lane Kiffin. So I was a little just like, who wants to hear about SEC football? Who wants to hear about the Big East? Now that the pages have turned, I was going to tell this on our show we did a few weeks ago because I did watch that 30-30, which was awesomely done. Not that awesome is a word. But, yeah, I do miss the Big East.
Want them to do a 30-for-30 just on the Big East. Championship, or just on the Big East semifinals and the championship, the tournament. That's what I want to do next.
Yeah, because that one was kind of just an overall developing of the conference itself, and it didn't touch on as much as what happened recently. I remember when I worked in Vegas one day, and I specifically remember this day in 09 when they had that four overtime game. I mean, there was something fun about knowing, like, all right, I'm going to try and get my mom to let me stay home from school for a couple of days because the Big East tournament starts on a Tuesday, and you're thinking in the back of your head, there's a chance that one of these teams that starts on a Tuesday could win five games in a row and pull off a Madison Square defeat where the guys, like, fall on the ground because they're out of, you know, out of exhaustion after a five-day run. That
and then get beat
that
the first round
of
the tournament
know?
The next week.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you're like, oh, dude, you had a hell of a run to Big East, so props to you. But holy God, you played five games in 5 nights. No wonder you came out flat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll always love the ACC because that's where my boys are at. But, yes, the Big East does offer something that is missing. You know, I think that I think the Big Ten and the Big 12 and the ACC, when they hold their tournaments in the cities and the functions that they do, are a lot of fun. But it is hard to replicate what that conference had. And, I mean, like
in Madison Square Garden, the magic would come alive in Kemba Walker. I mean, you could go down the list of dudes hitting three-point shots in the clutch to win the game in third overtime. You know what I mean? It's just so many. That Friday and Saturday, I work them usually all the time, but it didn't matter because everybody's watching the game when it counted, so you didn't even have to go to your tables. Or you'd be right at your table just to watch a shot, and then they call a timeout. I mean, I just, time and time again, or just people from the East Coast come in on Friday and Saturday and say, hey, can you turn to, hey, can you, no, we already got it there, dude. Sit down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you knew Villanova was going to be in there with Georgetown and Syracuse and Boeheim. Like, okay, we got ourselves some games. Like, there might be a blowout or two, but it's normally going to be just like a boxing match slugfest, and someone's going to put up a hell of a run in that conference tournament. Or, you know, the Syracuse, they had some crazy run. Yeah, I'm with you. We could go on this forever, but it is sad that that's gone because that is something that you truly can't replace, and it'll be a long time if ever before that happens again in our lifetime, buddy. That was a very fun tournament to watch. And like I said, it was fun because it started on Tuesday. There were so many damn teams like, oh, dude, I get to watch this from Tuesday to Saturday, and a team could win all five games in a row. Like, okay, I'm locked in. Let's get rid of – let's take a couple of days off work today because I want to watch the Big East.
Yep. That was pretty crazy. And Syracuse won all five, and UConn, the year that they won it, won four in a row in that tournament. And they, because they were 9-9, they finished 9-9 that year.
Yeah, I remember that.
So they didn't have to play the first day because they, you know, it was like the bottom four or whatever. So then that would kind of bump them in. Actually, I think that the way they set up, the last two didn't get into the tournament because there's too many teams. I think the last two didn't get in. I don't know, but
as I ripped you for it, I never missed it.
Yeah, exactly.
I would give you
a
little bit of a hard time, but I watched every damn game.
I mean, they're going to do one. You know, it was worth just the Big East and what it did. It was of course, you're going to have that kind of, you know, documentary on it first. But then, now that it comes down to that, the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, the different thing, and even, you know, lingering into the 2011-12, you know, they're going to do one at some point, no doubt about it. Let's pick up the pace a little bit. We got about 22 minutes left of the live stream. We're going to cut it right in that realm. I do have work and all that, and I got to run an errand and, you know, that type of thing. And this weather is just ridiculous, man. I mean, I don't see any single digits coming back until next, maybe January, dude. I mean,
knocking on wood temperature. Right now. Knocking on wood.
Yeah, right? I mean, I know snow's coming. I'm not worried about the snow, but the temperature, man. Whew.
Mm-hmm.
The Midwest is starting to dry out, dude. It's a good thing. And, you know, people in California are like, oh, really? You're drying out? Sweet. Just what we need. We've been drying out for 3 years. So let's get to some bubble talk and bracketology. I think I'm going to let you start with the bubble talk. I'll add in, and then we'll just look at it. Literally, it's a perfect day to do it. It's March 8th. It just got updated today, the bracketology, and we'll just kind of peek at it. Of course, we're nothing's in stone, but just kind of look at it like Does that team deserve that? If that was a matchup, that'd be crazy. That would be the hardest side of the bracket, that type of thing. Let's start with the bubble, though, because, you know, you've done a pretty good job with the bubble all year, and it kind of lends itself to this type of year, right, Marshall, that the bubble actually, the bubble watch started a lot earlier than normal years, no doubt about it. And some of it has to do with how, you know, we talked about how even it is this year. There are a handful of teams. There's actually, I believe, Pittsburgh and Syracuse are going to play in the first round. I could be wrong there. There are a couple of these bubble teams that actually may be able to work it out within playing each other. What do you got on the bubble for us?
I think that I heard the debate earlier, and for the kind of the one major, I guess we'll consider a hot button topic is Northern Iowa, and I've been listening to podcasts a lot lately on sports, and this was like the CBS like sport podcast, and they do them for like college football and college basketball, like the Ion podcast, certainly really cool. And they did like a 50-minute podcast of three guys that work for CBS Sports, college basketball, whatever. And they spent like 30 minutes breaking down Northern Iowa. And they're torn because I guess Northern Iowa only has like one great win. And I think it was like Lenardi has them out of the tournament. But then like KenPom, like one of the ratings they use, they have them as like as high as 15. So basically the numbers are saying that a team that's been ranked that high on like the KenPom ranking has never missed the tournament. But Lenardi has them for sure out. And so now people are kind of wondering, well, do you maybe give them a little bit of a break? Because, you know, Van Vliet and Baker, who've been their studs, Van Vliet was out for a couple of games. And do you
hold
maybe
on,
give
hold
them
on.
A little
You're
bit of a...
You talking about Wichita State or Northern Iowa?
Sorry, Wichita State. Who
okay,
lost Northern
okay,
Iowa?
My bad.
Wichita State, excuse me. Peculiar spot because, you know, the numbers of Lenardi, and Lenardi doesn't miss much. That they're saying that the Vegas over-under odds of teams you predict out of 68, if you want to pick whether he'll get under or above like a certain amount of teams, I think Vegas has him at 66. So they're saying he's going to pick 66 out of the 68 right. You can guess if you want to go under or below that, or under or above. So Lenardi is a pretty smart dude for this stuff. That's, I guess, kind of his job. But this KenPom rating is saying, too. So
that was hilarious.
It's kind of fascinating.
That.
You know, so I'm like, well, and you have Van Vliet and Baker, who are two studs that seems like they've been in Wichita State forever, and they had their run of like 40 games of an undefeated home record, kind of like my Warriors. They're not quite there; they just got to 45. But yeah, so I think that's one team that will be debated upon because, like I said, they only have like one impressive win. They lost their conference tournament to Northern Iowa, I said it right this time. And so now people are saying, well, do they maybe get a little bit of a bump because they have had kind of a decent name? So that'll be one team that will be interesting to see on the bubble. And I don't feel you and I can debate much on because I don't think we watch much Northern Iowa. But they spent half their show discussing just Northern Iowa because you're comparing Lenardi against a ranking, and both those guys are consistently right. So that'll be kind of a fun one to see play out, Chris. Speaking of Lenardi, these are last four buys. These are four teams he feels are looking good. Is VCU, St. Joe's, USC, and Pittsburgh. As you mentioned, Pittsburgh is playing Syracuse, and he has Syracuse the last four in. It's around like that 60 to 68 range. Pittsburgh, I was telling a buddy of mine, they're kind of like a B-minus to me. Like they did okay in the ACC. They defended their home court. They weren't really world beaters on the road, and they didn't really have a huge win. I mean, they did beat Duke at the end of the year when Duke was depleted. But I don't believe Pittsburgh walked into Virginia or Carolina and won. I know we took care of business against them. So Pittsburgh's kind of one of those teams. Same thing for Syracuse, Chris. They had a couple of games where, well, actually, they walked into Duke and lost by a travel. they fought Carolina pretty hard. So, as you mentioned, that would be kind of an all-in game. With Pittsburgh and Syracuse. For USC, I do know at the start of the year, they were in first place in the Pac-12, and you're kind of thinking, huh, that guy, it's Andy, the dude that coached like the Dunk City, Florida Gulf Coast team.
Yeah.
Coaching USC.
And they're in too, by the way,
well.
The Gulf Coast.
Yeah, they're in, which is awesome. That's kind of a fun story. The first top 15 team to ever make the Sweet 16. So we'll see if they can repeat some of that magic. That'd be hard to do, but who knows? So USC in the Pac-12, I think the whole Pac-12 is a damn bubble. I think that obviously Oregon is in. I think Utah is in, and Cal is in. After that, I mean, it's just kind of a huge crapshoot. So I guess we'll see. But like I said, Pitt and Syracuse are going to fight each other. USC, they started the year off pretty good. I know they finished 9-9 in conference, so I don't think their resume has done them much favors lately. St. Joseph's, I heard, is another one of those teams, Chris, where, again, I'm just going based on what I've heard off ESPN. I'm not going to try and act like I know all this, but they're another one of those teams that's kind of on the brink of, they had a pretty damn good mid-major conference year, but, you know, was it good enough? And I think the one reason, like, the was it good enough chant, I think that's kind of what I'll ask this year, and we'll toss it back and discuss a few more teams. But I think with so much parity, like, on the bubble this year, you truly are going to kind of have to pick and choose. Because, I mean, when you're comparing maybe St. Bonaventure, who was the last four in, compared to maybe like Gonzaga or Oregon State, like, you know, I think all these teams on the bubble, on a good year, probably wouldn't have a huge reason to bitch and complain if they missed it. But I think with the parity we've experienced this year within almost every conference, I think that the talk is kind of loose as to who's going to sneak in. So I think the bubble talk is going to be maybe a little more debatable than normal. Just because there's been so many teams that are maybe at 500 in their conference, and their resumes probably aren't that good for a normal bubble year. But with this year being such a wide-open year, I think Selection Sunday could possibly be a little more entertaining than normal. Or maybe I should say the conference tournaments could have maybe a little bit of a higher presence for their worth this year, my friend.
Yeah, and just kind of, you know, going through, there's a little section of the bubble that, you know, they say still work to do. And I know a lot of people are kind of focusing in on that Atlantic 10. Right now, it's just St. Joseph in Dayton, St. Bonaventure, VCU, George Washington. And that's there is something to be said there. I think there's what was the other squad that St. Bonaventure now, they did beat Wisconsin, I believe. I believe they beat Wisconsin. What was the other team that kind of looked at me and I thought, huh? I know Butler's kind of, they've kind of closed decently. They're kind of lingering as well. What is the other team that I was kind of eyeing? Huh. Yeah, I can't remember who it was. But you're right. I think you kind of broke that down well, because it's going to be really picky and choosy, and my guess is some kind of non-conference, you know, win, or just a horrible loss is going to be the difference. And obviously that's kind of in general, because that can be the discrepancy. But, you know, having that big win might get it. There is going to be a lot of argument, no doubt about it. And you wonder, it's kind of weird, because a couple weeks ago Michigan looked like they were going to be in, and now they got work to do. Like you said, Texas Tech, a team that that's a team that we were going to talk about. Texas Tech, a team that I think they for sure need to win their first game. If they win the second game, I think they're in. No doubt about it. And Tubby Smith did win the Big 12 Coach of the Year, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Which is crazy because, you know, although, you know, his last year and a half, or his last year didn't go well in Minnesota, and obviously inconsistent, you know, in the middle of the season, early and late, they played great. Middle of the season, not so much, but at least they were inconsistent, and they, you know, you could count on inconsistently consistent, whereas this is just, what we got now is just a complete and utterly mess, and especially with the style difference that we went from coach to coach. It's not like we had someone underneath him or, you know, that type of thing. We went recruiting-wise the complete opposite, which hurts you as well, because then you don't have the, you know, you have a system, but you don't have near the guys to run your system, and it takes a lot longer to build it that way. But I think they have to win their first game. I feel like they're in for sure, I feel, if they win their first game. But if they win their second game, there's no way you could deny them in my mind, just because the way they ended and whatnot, they closed so well. And Tubby, it's funny, you look back at it now, his time in Minnesota, he had some great non-conference runs. You can, you know, you remember one of them, because they Minnesota beat North Carolina in a tournament, a non-conference tournament early in the season. This was probably, what, 09 or something like that, 08? I don't remember. Maybe it was 2010.
Around there, yeah.
Maybe it was 10. I don't really remember, 11, something like that. But and it adds to it that he, on a personal note anyway, you know, he since like 91 or 90, he's, as far as legally, we've only been to the second round legally, and he took us there. So it's really not turning out good for the Gophers right now on that exchange that they had. The young coach with the pedigree has yet to implement what he may or may not be as a coach here or anywhere else. We'll see. But that's another one that has to be in, no doubt about it. And just kind of looking at, you know, from afar, the bracketology, nothing's, you know, it's really about getting them in. He does a pretty good job of placing them, but placing them can be weird at times. You think you got a couple figured out because of regional area and strength of how many people are, you know, butts in the seats. Those ones are a little easier to find out where a North Carolina or a Duke or a, you know, a team that's going to travel no matter what. You can start to look at some of that. And where they want to, like, avoid certain things. But let's kind of just look at the bracketology here as we close the show and just kind of look around. I mean, right now, if it were to stop today, what do you think of the West and your North Carolina squad with a second seed being Oregon? Now, you do have the pretty much red-hot Wisconsin Badgers in there. You got Kentucky that, you know, luckily you didn't down-talk them this year, so they, I don't think they'll bite you this year, although Maryland, I guess, is lingering. I don't know about that. But you know, West Virginia, I think, would be a pretty strong team in there. They've been kind of on the low quiet, but we know what they can do, especially tourney time, when they can get some points together to grind out with that defense and athleticism. Right now, though, sitting in the West first week in Raleigh, that's not that bad of a little bracket over there for you. When your sixth and your third team, seem like maybe the most dangerous. It's tough to say because, you know, you hate to downplay Kentucky if that were to happen there, you know?
Yeah. Overall, I wouldn't mind that bracket, Chris. I've been lucky. I'm happy that Lenardi finally took Duke out of Denver just so I can, like, hope that, you know, it will come back to fruition for me. As, like, if Duke stays in Denver for the 2 weeks of his bracketology, there's no way I'm going to see him. So he switched him out now, so now I'm a believer again. but for the West, obviously, I don't think there's much debate about Carolina being a one. I think if they win their first game, which would put them into the semifinals on a Friday when I'll be in Vegas to watch them, I'll be happy to do that. I think they're sitting at a one, so I think that's fair. Maryland and Kentucky, Maryland would be interesting to play, but I think most of those seedings are right. I think Kentucky has done a good job to come up to a four, and I think the downward arrow for Maryland as a five is fair. I was going to ask you, there's no real point of debating like any seeds above a 10 to 15 because I trust Lenardi on that, and if you're between a 12 and a 10 or a 15, you've kind of deserved that from your resume in a way. Obviously, an 8 and a 9 is a little different story, but once you're above of number 10, I think a seed is a seed. But I would say, for what West Virginia's done, I would say, in my opinion, barring, I guess I didn't break down their non-conferences, why the hell would West Virginia be a 2 seed and Oregon be a 3? I mean, can you really rattle off a bunch of big shot wins that Oregon had this year that West Virginia's resume couldn't trump or at least equal?
Well, I mean, if you're going to ask a question, you might as well have done some of the research there, because now you're going to make me rush and do the research on live when we have about 6 minutes left.
I brought it up. They beat Oregon, beat Baylor, Cal, Utah, USC. They beat up on their own conference. So
what did they do in the non-conference?
Their best non-conference wins were Baylor, Valparaiso, and Fresno State.
So they beat Baylor?
They did beat Baylor in a preseason tournament. They beat Baylor and they beat Valparaiso, and Valparaiso had a really nice year in the Horizon. So I would say those were their two good wins. Their losses in the top 50 were at Oregon State, at Colorado, at California. They also had two awful losses at Boise State and at Stanford. So, okay, so that's their resume. They did good in their conference, and they beat Baylor. So, okay, now let's look at
West
Virginia.
So who did West Virginia beat? They lost to Virginia. Who do they have as a solid non-conference win? Virginia Tech?
Yeah, they beat San Diego State, who's, I would, better than Valparaiso.
We know that.
Well, from the rankings. They beat, Virginia Tech, K-State, and K-State again, and they beat San Diego State, who I'd say, I guess you'd cross that with Valparaiso. Okay.
So,
But
they have a better non-conference
win,
but then they have a Kansas win.
And they also won at Iowa State. They beat Baylor twice. They swept Iowa State, and they beat Texas Tech twice. So, I mean, maybe they're both their non-conference wins of Valparaiso and San Diego State crisscross. Okay, and that crosses out that. Who is a better conference? The Big 12, 100%, in my opinion. And I would say the wins that, I mean, you beat Kansas, and you swept Baylor, and you beat out. Yeah, I would just completely disagree with that. I guess I'm just looking strictly at wins and losses. But
I'll say this: I'm comfortable with them being 3, but I think you're right with the Oregon, yeah. I don't think they should be a 2, West Virginia. You know, that's my opinion. I don't think they should be a 2 per se, but I don't think I think 3 is a nice spot for them. But I agree with the Oregon.
Okay, to move on to the East. Right now, Chris, Villanova is a 1. Michigan State is a 2. I'll say this: I think that if Villanova doesn't win the Big East Conference and Michigan State does win the Big Ten, I think he'd easily flip those. I know that Villanova's had a nice run this year, but again, if we're comparing strength of conferences,
at the wins too. They don't have many good wins.
They don't. I think that could easily be a 2-for-1 swap. Right now, also listed in there, Texas Tech is at 7, so that's pretty much a good sign that Lenardi believes Texas Tech is in. As you mentioned, if they win,
hey, Tubby played Michigan
that up.
State well too. Tubby's played Michigan State tight.
They do. Arizona is a 6 in that division. Who could possibly play in Miami is a 3. I'm fine with those seeds. Arizona's had kind of an up and down year. Miami is a 3 seed. I think that could be maybe a little generous, maybe a spot generous than I could think. But they did defend their home court. But yeah, I think that would be
They're in a tough conference, too. They're in the second-best conference, I think. So I think
they
that three is fine. Just because they close like shit, I still think they deserve a three.
True. St. Mary's and Vanderbilt is in that 8-9 game. Tonight, St. Mary's plays against Gonzaga. I believe St. Mary's is in even if they lose. I know Gonzaga's on the bubble, so maybe I guess best case for the West Coast Conference for just some free pub would be to have Gonzaga beat St. Mary's in a close game and let them both sneak in. I know last night Gonzaga beat BYU to finish their year, and St. Mary's beat Pepperdine. So that would be an interesting game. And it appears that Vanderbilt, who started off the year pretty ugly, got smoked by Texas in the Big 12 SEC tournament, has come on strong enough, also defended their home court very well, and as of right now, Lenardi has them as a 9. To go into the South right now, Virginia is a 1 seed. I don't think either of us are going to disagree with that. Virginia's non-conference resume is pretty damn good looking. They also had a very nice year in the ACC. I think one point you could possibly make, Chris, is that if Carolina won the ACC regular season title and Virginia doesn't win the ACC tournament, you could have a situation where a Michigan State, if Villanova keeps her one, could trump Virginia. Because there is some sense for –
They have some shaky losses, too, in there, randomly. Mm-hmm. I think that may hurt them if that's the case. You're right. I still think to keep that number one seed, they're going to have to win the ACC tournament.
Yeah, we can still be wanting about parity this year. There is still something.
Say the same thing about Oklahoma.
Oklahoma
wins out.
You still need to have a very gorgeous looking resume to get a one seed. Those aren't things you just hand out, and it normally does require a conference title or a regular season title. South Carolina, Lenardi has them as an 8 seed right now. I'd be scared about them because their offensive flaws, but maybe just having the amount of wins they do, Chris, is enough for them. As of right now, at the Iowa State-Purdue, Iowa State is a team I've really enjoyed watching this year. They can score the ball with anyone, and to have them play Purdue in the first weekend will be fun because they're both kind of up-in-the-air teams. That also offers you Baylor as a 6, which I think is fair, and Utah as a 3. I think that division alone, I should say the South bracket alone right now, would be a lot of fun to have a team like Oklahoma, Baylor, Iowa State. I guess you're kind of loading up on the Big 12 in that division, Bud. And as you mentioned, the Big 12, whoever wins that damn thing could maybe bump up a couple of seeds, my friend, because I think almost any team could win it. Obviously, Kansas is favored, but if you're maybe Iowa State or Baylor or West Virginia or I guess almost anyone, that winning that Big 12 tournament, Chris, could really be a nice bump up of seeds to maybe help you avoid a tougher first-round game.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, like we said, the Virginia, the Oklahoma, and the Michigan State, those three teams for me really stand out as lingering at that number one seed. If Oklahoma goes ahead and wins out, it's going to be tough when you look at their non-conference. And some of these teams have a win over Villanova. So that head-to-head will come into play. They start to look and go, okay, they beat Xavier once. Who else they beat over there? Or maybe they beat them twice in the conference or whatever. They could win their conference tournament and still lose if Virginia or Oklahoma wins their conference tournament, because I believe those are the two teams that beat them in the non-conference. So Villanueva, like I'm trying to say it every which way, but those guys, the Wildcats, they don't have a four-guard system this year, and because that's, you know, when they've gone their furthest, that's when they had that, the three-guard, four-guard system, but they could drop down for as good a season, you know, and obviously the coach has a nice, you know, resume to an extent, but they're going to have to do something. Out of all the teams that we talked about, Maryland, Iowa, all these teams that, man, they need to show up. Kansas even, right? Nova, what have you done for me lately the last 2 years? Nova needs to do something this year.
I believe, Chris.
Go ahead.
I don't think they've made the second weekend since 2009, which is mind-blowing because they've pretty much always been a pretty damn good seed. Not always a one, but probably a top five seed, and you haven't made the Sweet 16 since 2009? Like, really? You know, and you wonder why people maybe give you a hard time or maybe think that the seed is kind of a fraudulent seed. Like, do something for me. At least make the Sweet 16.
Huh. They made... Interesting.
I
thought it was...
I could have misread that, but I thought it's been that long, which is head-scratching, to say the least. And we can touch on the Midwest, and then I can let you go to work, but I know you need to do that. And I just have one question for you, which is short. In the Midwest, though, that gives you Kansas in Des Moines, obviously, for being a one seed, you do deserve some home treatment against Carolina being in Raleigh, Virginia being in Raleigh, Villanova and Brooklyn, again, up in the air, and Kansas going to Iowa. Speaking of Iowa, Iowa is a five seed in that bracket right now and would be a four seed against Duke. Oh, I would love to do a show and have the Hawkeyes, teams I've given a free pass on all year, knock out my arch rivals. That would be, that'd be some fun to do with you, Chris. Also in Des Moines, as we're now, Lenardi is sending Texas up as a six seed. It appears that Cameron Ridley, the Texas center who was their beast at the start of the year, may play in the Big 12 tournament. He's out of the walking boot. The Big 12 tournament, maybe, I guess you're not 100% sure, let him rest. But that could be a nice addition to a Texas team that occasionally has some offensive flaws, but also has one of the better resumes that we've talked about for the last 3 minutes of anyone in the country. I believe Texas has 4 wins against top 10 teams this year, and that's a stat that very few teams can pull off in the country. They could play Indiana that following week. Indiana is a 3 seed. I believe that's a fair number. I got a feeling you'd agree with me on that, Chris. And also, that leaves you with Xavier as a 2. I guess let me ask you, Chris, what would you think about Indiana as a 3 and Xavier as a 2? And is Xavier a team that maybe needs to fear a little bit, or do they have a little bit of a better-looking resume that gets them maybe off the hook that Villanova could be on? I guess I'll just read to you right.
I think their non-conference is decent enough, you know,
they
compared
beat
to
USC,
them.
They beat Dayton. They beat Cincinnati, swept Butler. Obviously, now we're talking conference play. They beat Nova, the one at Providence, swept Providence. So they did have two bad losses in the top 50 are at Nova, at Seton Hall. So I guess them and Nova split it. But USC, Dayton, and Cincinnati is a little better looking, Chris, than Nova's resume. So, yeah. So are you happy with the 2 and the potential 3 for Indiana and Xavier, sir?
It's interesting because I think Indiana has a chance to pass them, but they did most of their work late. They definitely did most of their work late. So I think that, you know, goes into there. I think that Xavier Villanova definitely, that game means a lot as long as, if that's what it turns out to be, who knows? You know, they can get upset on the way there. Like you said, Seton Hall just beat them not long ago when they were still had a chance to win it outright. But seeing those two play the last time tells me those teams, it was pretty quality basketball between the two. And so I think Xavier is still kind of lingering there, but I still think to hold that 2 seed, they got to keep going because, like you said, if Indiana, I'm not sure Indiana wins it, but if they were to win the Big Ten tournament, they would definitely move up more because then that would give them that extra winner or two. By the way, 2009 was the last – did you say 2011 or 2009 for Villanova?
2009.
Okay, 2009 they made the Final 4.
Okay.
But other than that, the last 2 years have been rough considering what they've done in the regular season. That's for damn sure. It's been really bad.
Let me just ask you one question,
like
but I'll let you
Pittsburgh
go.
Okay.
Out of all the conferences we've talked about, which one are you looking forward to just for watching the most for fun? I have an answer, but I'll let you go first. What conference tournament, whether big or small conference, are you excited to watch the most this weekend and see how things play out?
Well, I think because of the movement, the ACC and the Big Ten really stand out to me, the Big 12 because of competition. And of course, bubble teams and all that. Can Texas Tech win three games or something like that? But it's hard to really get too detailed because, you know, I could answer that on Thursday and Friday maybe a little bit better because then we can get a look at what the actual matchups are going to be. But I would say, those two, you know, the Big 12, just because it's been fun all year, and then the movement that can happen in the ACC and the Big 10. Those are the ones that really, there's some number one seed to be had out there.
I'm going to go with the Big 12 too, just because I think that all those damn teams have beat each other up this whole year. Like, we didn't get to see Indiana play every team in the Big Ten this year, or North Carolina didn't go on the road to all the tough places. And these Big 12 teams beat the crap out of each other. It's like, okay, guys, now we get to do it again, and there's some good seeding bids on the line due to the fact that if you win three games in the Big 12 tournament, well, shit, you just beat three teams that are ranked. So it's like, game on. So I'll obviously be cheering on my heels in Vegas, but I'm very excited to see the Big 12 slugfest and who wins that conference possibly and how the seeding turn out. Because like I said, everyone's basically locked in, and Texas Tech is so close. So with all that said, this is one of my favorite shows of the year. But next week is even better because then we can talk brackets. Chris and I will be back. We'll see how the seeds play out. We'll obviously make picks for the first weekend. Obviously, we might spend a little time this year breaking down who got seeded where, because that could be up for debate. And maybe the Wichita State situation could be a little dicey this year because one ranking says they're in, Lenardi says no. I guess we'll see what the hell happens. So we'll be back. This is the best time of year for the show. We always appreciate the listens. You have a nice week. Enjoy all this basketball. And next time we talk, we'll be talking brackets, and it doesn't get better than that. Take care. Peace.